Hello, I'm Matthew Cross, and I'm talking today with my friend, Marshall Thurber. Marshall is a highly successful business consultant, educator, author, public speaker, and visionary, and a former trial attorney and real estate developer. Marshall made millions of dollars before he was 30, using his unique, powerful, and practical theories for wealth creation. Over a decade ago, Marshall was in an audience where his friend, Mark Victor Hansen, the co-author of the best-selling Chicken Soup for the Soul series, was lecturing. Mark spontaneously invited Marshall to address the audience on making millions of dollars. We'll hear that original presentation along with Marshall's latest key insights on wealth creation. Marshall, how do you feel about that original tape today?
Well, I hadn't listened to that tape in years, but I was struck by how powerful it was then and how powerful it is today. It really has stood the test of time. The principles, I believe, are as solid today as they were then, and I believe they'll be that solid in the future. There are, of course, some additions I'd like to make to that tape, since I have learned something since it was made, and I believe that's the reason we're here today, is to listen to this tape and have me make some additions to what was, I feel, a very powerful tape then.
Excellent. So that's what we'll do. We're going to start off by hearing the original introduction to the tape by Dr. Paul Fair. Dr. Fair introduces Mark Victor Hansen, who then in turn introduces Marshall Thurber.
In this tape, Marshall Thurber concisely presents the secrets for making millions of dollars. He is introduced by Mark Victor Hansen, one of the country's leading motivational speakers on principles of success. The presentation was spontaneously requested during a seminar being conducted by Dr. Hansen. During his presentation, Marshall makes frequent references to the work of the late R. Buckminster Fuller, who was affectionately known as Bucky. Bucky Fuller was a comprehensive thinker and visionary, and is considered by many to be the genius of this century. He is popularly known for designing the geodesic dome and for his concept of the planet as spaceship Earth. Until his death in 1983, Buckminster Fuller had the longest biography in Who's Who in America, describing his numerous achievements and enormous contribution to humanity. Both Marshall Thurber and Mark Victor Hansen were students of Bucky Fuller. And now, listen to the secrets for making millions of dollars.
As an attorney par excellence, the guy has just really fine thinking, had an exquisite real estate career where when he was in San Francisco, he may correct me on the number, but I'm going to be pretty close. The lowest paid person on his totem pole, if you call secretarial low paid, Linda, and I don't think that it is, was earning, made $46,000 as a secretary because he was investing in excellence. He and I are both great fans of Bucky Fuller. We're consummating several business relationships with some of my clients and some of his clients right now because one of my five companies is Mark Victor Hansen Enterprises. I just see, find a need and fill it, which is one of the points I'll teach you in a minute. I've asked from my heart to Marshall's if he'd be kind enough to share with you 5 minutes of how to become a millionaire, because that's what we're talking about today, one of the avenues. And Marshall is a great, deep, spiritual energy and universe, too. Would you give my friend Marshall Thurber a great deal of applause as he comes and shares with you for a second, please? Thank you. Great.
This wasn't planned, right? We agree. A lot of people ask me, how is it that you make the money? And what I'd like to do is just spend a quick 5 minutes here and go over what I would say is the secrets. If you'd just be willing to follow, basically said all the same things. I just want to summarize it in my words. So if you'd be willing to give me 5 minutes, how many people are willing to just stay with me for 5 minutes, okay? And if you'll do this and follow his principles, you listen to those tapes. By the way, on the way over here, guess what I was listening to? Tapes, tapes, tapes. And where's Ernie, right? What do we have you do? Tapes, tapes, tapes. And we have a 12-month program where we meet once a month. And what are we preparing for each person in their own first person? They're having their own what? Tapes, tapes, tapes. So it's really amazing because the conscious mind can only hold one thought at a time. Think about it. One thought. And you got a choice of what you put there. So I'll let that go. I just want to go real quickly through the steps. And the first step I'd like you to do is just to uncross your arms and legs. And what I want to do now is ask you just to relax and shut your eyes. And this is really, I hadn't used these terminology, but coming from the end result is really, really kind of nice. And I totally agree with it. But what I'd like you to do now, just assume that somebody just gave you $10 million, and that's not enough, $20 million, if that's enough, $30 million, tax-free, in the bank, boom. It's been invested and it's yielding you whatever amount you need, $3 or $4 million, and you're in tax-free, you're municipal. So you've got $3 or $4 million of your cash to yourself. It's there. Just want you to see it now. Look in your account. There it is. Now, after the vacation, taking your vacation, it could be a week, a month, a year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever it is, but after the vacation, just finished the vacation, you got your tan, you're rested, what is it that you're going to do with the rest of your life that will make your heart sing? Okay. Now, would you open your eyes? That's where to start. First, come from the end result, and if it's not making your heart sing, you shouldn't do it. Because that people who make their money, there's a study by Shelley Blotnick, pointed out they studied 1,500 people for 25 years. Every single one of the people who became millionaires did it in a field where they were almost embarrassed because they made the money because what? They loved it. Now, people who made money for money made it but didn't keep it. Someone went for the money and what? Made it and then what? But if you're doing what your heart sings, hey. So the first thing is if it isn't making your heart sing, you're not going to make millions. I mean, there's no way I could do the schedule that I do if I didn't love it. So that's the first piece. The second piece is once you know what area or areas, by the way, this is part of what we're doing in our program, is look for the master in the field. Find the master. Now, there may be two or three, and go on that search, and then go and study with the master. Don't worry about the money end of it. Go and study with that master, whoever it is. Find the best, though.
Marshall, who are some of the masters who have influenced you the most?
Well, there really were two, the first one being Arbuckminster Fuller. Fuller was the person who invented the geodesic dome. He coined the term spaceship Earth and the word ecology. Bucky was the most comprehensive thinker that I ever met, and I believe he will be known in future generations and future centuries as probably one of the most important thinkers of our time. Fuller, in 1938, made 50 predictions in a book called Nine Chains to the Moon of what would happen within 50 years. At the time the book was written, people laughed at Fuller and thought it was preposterous, most of what he was predicting. However, 47 of the 50 predictions actually took place, including fiberglass, a photoelectric cell, a person on the moon, and most recently they have a thing called the Buckminster Fullerene, which is a new carbon atom that no one believed could exist, and it was found after he died, but he had made that prediction. So Bucky had an incredible ability to look at the situation from the biggest picture and then bring it down to the more specific, and that was the way he always looked at things, from the big picture down to the little. He said that you would always look at things in scenarios, and he said there's nothing that would tell you about a butterfly if you just studied a caterpillar. You had to have the scenario butterfly and understand that scenario in order to understand how a butterfly appears. And so he said, always look at the big picture. Once you understand the big picture and its principles, then the specific action will be very, very obvious and you can make these types of predictions. So he was just fun to be with. I learned so much. It was just very, very exciting. After he died, I had a chance to study with another master, and his name is Dr. W. Edwards Deming. Deming is the person who went to Japan in 1950 and taught the Japanese a management theory that turned their country around. The economy, of course, in 1950 was devastated after the war. We had dropped several bombs on them. They were emotionally debilitated, and they were looking for a way to improve their society. And what happened here was Dr. Deming presented them with a management theory that they totally embraced, and they really believed that he was the person that allowed them to create an economic miracle. In fact, the most prestigious award you can get for quality in Japan is called the Deming Award, because in honor of Dr. Deming, who they believe is the primary person and primary architect for the economic recovery of their country. So having a chance to study with him for 7.5 years and with Buckminster Fuller for 9.5 years has provided me with a basis from which to operate my life, and I found that I'm very, very fortunate to have the combination of the two of them.
So you've really had the opportunity to integrate your life philosophy of following and studying great masters and bringing that philosophy home.
That's correct. That's what I said on a tape, and that's where I've been living my life.
Excellent. So let's continue.
And as you do that, you will and totally get and study and learn and get some what is critical, which is experience. Whatever the experiential base, you'll get it. And as you go along, you're going to get that experience.
Experience. Marshall, if there's one guiding concept, maybe a guiding ground rule for our society that seems to really govern just about everything from our educational system to the employment system, it's that you're really not going to get anywhere unless you've got experience, and preferably the more the better. How do you feel today about this subject?
Well, I feel this is a critical area where I'd like to expand the tape. When I was with Dr. Deming, the very first question he asked me was, how important is experience to learning? And of course, I grew up believing that experience was the best teacher. My dad used to say, experience is the best teacher. It should be. It's the most expensive. And that's what happened to me. I used to go around saying, you know, when in doubt, do it, because if I do it, I'll have an experience, and that'll allow me to learn something. So when Dr. Deming asked me that question, of course, I told him it was the most important thing. And immediately he started screaming at me. He said, nonsense! If experience is such a great teacher, he said, how come Americans aren't making the best automobiles? We certainly had more experience. I'd never really thought about it, but he was right. You know, we certainly did have more experience, and we weren't making the better product. So there was something I was missing. And what he was very clear with me was that all experience is filtered through theory first to have any meaning, and that theory always precedes experience if it's going to have meaning. And if you start to think about it, I mean, what did Einstein do? His theory came before the experience. Back in 1905, he was only 26 years old, and he wrote a paper that became known on a theory of relativity. And 2 years later, he wrote his famous equation, E equals MC squared. Now, these theories came first, and what he said was that whether or not these theories are correct or not had to be based on experience. And so he set himself up with a series of experiments to demonstrate the theories and to test them, and it was his experiments that demonstrated his theory, so that he made a prediction, and when his prediction came true, then it forever changed the way the world was looked at. And the atomic age came as a result of Einstein's theories. So Deming also had a theory on how management should work, and it was very different than traditional American management. And he made a prediction that if you followed his theories, you could dominate the economic business world. And that's exactly what he made that prediction to the Japanese. They followed his theories, and the economic miracle took place. So what makes a genius is they make predictions. People don't believe them. And then when the predictions take form in reality and become true, then they become geniuses. In fact, you can't really make a prediction without some basis and some theory. And I'm just realizing now more and more that what makes somebody bright or someone does well is they make predictions. I'm making a prediction on this tape that if you follow these principles or these theories, that you can make millions of dollars. And it's based on a theory. Even though I don't express it that way in the tape, I would now. And so experience alone isn't going to get you there. You want to have that experience. You want to go study with your master, but find out what that master's theory is that allows that master to make predictable results that are extraordinary, so that you're getting experience and you're learning the method, but underlying that method, there is a theory. So theory is an addition to this tape, or let's say an expansion of this tape, and it really has shifted my understanding of how the world works and how money is made, you've got to have a theory. And we're going to get into the theory here in this tape. Even though I don't use it on the tape, we will be bringing that in, that aspect in, as we expand on this tape together.
I see. And on the concept of theory, Marshall, what led you initially to the understanding of, say, Dr. Deming's theory as being a valid theory?
Well, I was living in California practicing law at the time, and I just was struck by how much better the Japanese cars were than the American cars. And I knew that they didn't have the experience, quote-unquote, even though I didn't think it in those terms, that we did, and yet they were making such a far better car and far superior in many ways. And, of course, their economic miracle was now very well known. So I was trying to figure out what was it that they were doing that was different. Clearly, we were working very hard. And as Deming said, you know, you can have best efforts, but best efforts alone are not going to get you there. People are working very hard. And we're talking in this tape here, it's not about working harder. It's working with the correct theory that produced the results. So as we go through this tape, where we talk about principles, I'd like you to start to think in terms of what's the theory underlying this tape. And whenever you're with someone who's making a prediction, what's the underlying theory based that this tape or prediction is being made on? And you use that basically as a benchmark. Dr. Deming says that knowledge is the ability to make predictions of future performance, and that any statement devoid of a prediction conveys no knowledge. So this tape is about a prediction. I predict that if you follow these steps and are willing to do this, you can become a multimillionaire.
Sounds great. So let's continue.
Once you've got that experience, you're going to find that little, what I call niche, that little area. By the way, you're not going to take on IBM or DuPont right away. It's that little niche. Arm & Hammer found his little niche when he was in Russia, and it just expanded real quickly. But it starts with finding a little niche. And that niche will differentiate you. Different isn't always better, but better is always different. And so once you've found your niche, now that's, you know, the problem with it, you say, okay, so I found my niche and I'm really good at it. But you will become, if you study under a master and model a master and look for your niche, you're going to become excellent at it. You're going to be a master yourself soon. Now that's not going to guarantee. You've got to figure out, how am I adding value? How do I do more with less? What is it, the service that I'm adding?
Adding value. Marshall, how would you elaborate on this subject now?
I think there's a very major distinction that has to be made, is that when a customer purchases something, there's an exchange that goes on. And what the customer is saying is, the product or service that I am purchasing is more valuable to me than the money I'm exchanging for it. So the key concept here then is adding value. And the person who decides whether or not you're adding value is going to be the customer. And the customer is always going to look for the best value. So what is value? Well, value is quality divided by the cost. So if you have a certain budget, you're always going to look for what's the highest quality product I can get for the amount of money I can spend. And that's where value comes. And what Dr. Deming brought to the forefront was, how do you build quality into a product? How do you add values? And to make sure that you include in your evaluation the customer, because the customer is the one that's going to make that key exchange by buying your product or service. America, at the end of World War II, was the only industrial power that wasn't devastated by the war and was very arrogant because they had no competition and really kept the customer out of the loop, so to speak. However, what Dr. Deming pointed out was that if they would follow his theory, build quality in, the customer was going to recognize that quality and spend their money, the customer's money, to buy the highest value product. And once again, that's exactly what happened. The quality was built into the product. Quality divided by cost gives you the value, and the Japanese product simply added more value. Walter Wriston, who used to be the president of Citibank, said, you know, all the king's horses and all the king's men are helpless in face of a product that adds more value. And that's exactly what Dr. Deming did. He brought a system or a method based on a theory of variation, a theory of systems approach that he called a whole concept of profound knowledge. And that profound knowledge is exactly what he provided the Japanese. And of course, They added more value. The money went to the Japanese. Again, as you look day in and day out, the balance of payments is in favor of the Japanese. Why? Because their products add more value. And until we fully understand and recognize the principle and theories of Dr. Deming, we're always going to be less than we could be. And the companies in this country that have embraced Dr. Deming's theories have turned their companies around, Xerox being one, Ford Motor Company being another. These companies lost market share and were able to turn it around. Why? Not because they started working harder, it was because they were able to embrace a totally different theory, and that's Dr. Deming's, and he is really the prime mover in their economic turnaround. So it's the theory. Our country is not going to get there unless it embraced this new theory, just like Einstein. I mean, once again, you know, it took people to embrace it and to predict, again, you know, what's going to happen in the future. So new theories take time, and the Japanese are forcing us through the economic miracle they created to embrace Deming's theory. You really don't have any vote. You've got varying degrees of time depending on your competition, but when a new theory, it's almost like when an automobile came in, you couldn't continue to ride a horse. I mean, it was a structural change. You may not have liked the automobile, but you really had no vote once it was there. You may have even got in an automobile and didn't like the way it felt. But sooner or later, you're going to have to learn how to ride an automobile if you were going to move into the new age of automobiles and trying to compete on a horse. You just had no chance. And so this is basically what we're talking about here, is that the customer is the ultimate arbiter of what adds the value. And if you've got a system based on a theory, Dr. Deming calls it a theory of profound knowledge, then you will add more value than your competition, and you will get market share. You'll be able to do it for less cost. And then the customer wins, you win, and so it's basically a win-win situation. So this is where we're at right now, is we've got to think now in terms of how can I add value. So you're going to now study with your master, and you're going to find out the theory of the master and find out how the master adds value, and then you want to look at how you, given your experience and your theories, how you yourself can add value. And that's where you start to look for your niche. Your niche is going to be unique. It won't be the same as your master, but it will have his theory, and you will, of course, then be able to predict, because if you've got the theory, you can predict. Theory allows you to predict. If you copy the master, you're never, ever going to be able to make advancements, and you're not going to be able to predict future performance. Copying will never get you there. There's a theoretical base you must learn.
So in essence, really, the more value that you add, the more value will be added to you.
That's right. It's totally win-win.
There you go. Great. Let's continue.
Mark here is adding value, number one, by being here. And then I'll show you why he's making so much money. Not because he's standing in front of this room. He doesn't make his money by standing in front of this room. The room part of it, it's not a way to become a multimillionaire by doing this part. He's got the other part running. But you first got to find your niche. Now, if it's a niche that makes your heart sing, it's not work. People say to me, Marshall, you're just so happy, and it's so much fun for you. And I said, but how come? And I said, because I don't ever work. Work is things I don't like to do. So what you need to do now is be willing to take the time. And by the way, the slow road becomes the fast road. As he mentioned, that the average millionaire is 57 years old and usually does not start to take off until the early or mid-40s. Now, you can accelerate that by listening to his tapes and going with Mark. Mark's everything he said, he spoke the truth. I'm sitting back here, you know, I've known him forever, I've listened to his tapes, but I've never sat in on his presentation before. We're always gone into other places. First time ever. So I have a little handshake I'd like to share with you about the first piece. Now this is going to give you a comfortable living. We haven't got to the millions yet. Maybe I'll stop. No. Okay. But this is the first piece. But I have a little thing. Would you be willing to stand up here, Ernie? We're going to show you a special handshake for all of you that are really going to become millionaires, okay? How many would like to know the special handshake? Okay, great. So when you find, put your hands like this, okay, and I want you to find a person next to you, right? And you put it in like this, and you say, may the niche be with you. Thank you. So go ahead. I know it's hokey. Go ahead. Come on now. Come on. Shake hands. Come on. May the niche be with you. You don't want it? Come on. Note A, if you're not willing to do this, you're not willing to be rich. Because, hey, the first thing you got to be willing to, hey, people are going to laugh. Laughing is great. And also, hey, you got to be willing to be, as Bucky said, be willing to make public mistakes. Because if you want to make a difference, you got to be willing to go out there and fall flat on your nose. Now, you don't necessarily have to. So, you've got to add value. Why is it you can't make money gambling long term? Why? Why? Because for every winner, there has to be a what? So what kind of a game is that? Win, lose, zero sum. Now, the bookie makes some money. Why? It's adding a little value by what? Brokering it. In the world of betting, he is. Now, I'm not recommending being a bookie. No endorsement of it. But you understand that the gamblers are not there. It's a zero-sum business. But if you want to make money, you have to add value and continue to add value. Why do people buy Japanese cars over Americans? They add more what? Hello? They add more what? Value. And what does it force America? Americans want us to buy American cars. The Americans have to add better quality and what? Be a better car. Walter Wriston said very clearly, he's the chairman of Citicorp Bank. He said, you know, all the king's horses and all the king's men are helpless in the face of a product that adds more value. So if you've got to look at add value, and by the way, with the speed of change, you've got to, as he said, he's an information utility. When his information is no longer adding the value, he'll change the information, but he's still going to be the utility that adds the value. I like that, by the way. I never heard that before. So he's the added value utility corp. I mean, that would be the name of his, in my experience, and he is. He's excellent, and I've met his little daughter and his beautiful wife, and they're speaking Spanish, and there's a commitment to excellence that he lives. And lives it. So the first piece is that you find that niche. Stuart Emery. Anybody here know who Stuart Emery is? Anybody here familiar with Stuart? Yeah, who's Stuart? Oh, yes, he did. Actualizations. Yeah, he's a very famous person in my experience. And one of the things that Stuart is also in the personal development field, but when he was real young, he was a photographer, and he wanted to be the greatest food photographer in the world. And so, consciously or unconsciously, he started studying and found out that the greatest food photographer in the world was in England. Now, he's from Australia. So he went and he saved up his money and saved it up, and he finally flew to England and had 2 years' worth of money if he was conservative, and he wanted to study with a master food photographer. He went right in and met with him. He said, sir, he waited out by his door, finally got to see him. This is a long story, but he finally got to meet him. He said, look, I've come all the way from Australia. I have all my own money. I don't need a thing. I just want to hang out with you and learn what you do. I, too, want to be the best that I can be, and you're the greatest there is in food photography. Just let me hang out with you. He said, I don't have to pay you? He said, no. You'll do anything I ask? Anything. That sounds like a pretty good deal. So he said, fine, you can come to work for me. So the very first day, they met the next day to go to the food photographer's studio, and they brought in some food. This was in the morning, and the master looked at the food, looked at it again, he said, take it away. Brought in the next food, took it away. All morning long, food came in, food went out. Stuart said, no pictures. They took a break for lunch, and Stuart went off and for a little walk, and he said, hey, you know, I've been here, this is the master, spent all morning just looking at food and taking it away. So I flew all the way from Australia for this. After lunch, he came back and they brought in some food, and it was exquisite food. That silver platter, and it was shining, and it was glistening, the colors were vibrant. And the master looked at the food and he smiled. He said, now we'll begin. And then he turned and he looked at Stuart, and Stuart never forgot this. He says, you know, lesson number one. If you want to be the world's greatest food photographer, you only photograph what? World's greatest food. Lesson number one. If you want to be the best that you can be, you only hang out with who? The very best that you can get. Anything less than that. I interviewed 278 people to get six to start my real estate company. Now, I had a dream and a vision of where we were headed. hey, I was just a lawyer. I said, hey, we're going to be the greatest real estate company in San Francisco. We're going to be the hottest. We're going to be the best. I mean, who was I? I had $25,000 that I had. That's all I had. 3 years later, we, in terms of escrows closed, we closed more escrows in San Francisco than any other real estate company in San Francisco. Not in dollar volume, but in terms of escrows closed. The average salesperson made $206,000. The highest one made $987,000. And the receptionist with her bonuses made $46,000. Now, I know that's not so much now, but back in 1975 or 6, that was. But it's like coming from the, what your words are, having it already happen. As Jonathan Livingston Seagull says, you know, to fly as fast as thought, to be anywhere that is, you must first begin by knowing that you've already arrived. Coming from the end result. Now, why is it, though, if you're great, you're adding value, you're a great teacher, how come you don't make millions? Certainly, if you're a great teacher, you're certainly adding value. Now, you're not making millions, though. So just adding value isn't it. Adding value will not get you millions. Why is it a baseball player or a football player can make millions and a teacher doesn't, and the teacher adds more value maybe? What is it? What is the difference? Well, marketing's part of it, but what is it? It's a very simple concept. So the first thing is you've got to do what makes your heart sing. The second thing is you've got to get some experience.
Experience. There's that word again, Marshall. And I have a feeling we're on the verge of something big here, so I want to get right to it. And what would you add to this this example of experience on the tape?
Well, again, at the time I didn't know this piece that I've now learned from Dr. Deming. You know, and so I'm using experience here was the best I knew at the time. But the key now is you've really got to get your experience coupled with the correct theory. One of the big problems we've had with quality circles is we put people in a group and they are expected to make things better. And as Dr. Deming says, that you know, if you put people in a group to make things better, if they don't have a theory to guide them that's the correct one, then all they're really doing is recycling ignorance. And so what he's saying here is that you've got to have the right theory. Well, how do you know if you've got the right theory? Well, the way to do that is to know you have it or don't have it is you've got to make a prediction and see if it happens. If your prediction happens, then you know the theory works. If your prediction doesn't happen, then it's the wrong theory or it's the wrong execution of the method. So theory will allow you to predict future performance and provide you with guidance in the method. So I guess right here again, it's the same thing. Experience will not get you there. It's got to be experience guided by theory. And your master is going to have consciously or unconsciously some theory which he bases method on, and this method then produces a predictable outcome. So it's theory, method, okay, and then you have your outcome. And so we've got to make sure that we understand this piece. And why American schools now aren't working like they should is we're not using the new theories. And as a consequence, our school systems are broken. It's critical now that we start to look at that. And if we don't change that, you know, we're not going to get any better. The system is going to stay the same because we're still using the old theories of education.
So the way to really build wealth or to build anything is to be guided by a correct theory.
Absolutely. And you'll know it's good if you make predictions and it happens. Also, if you can make a prediction and it happens, there isn't any drama. Dr. Deming says drama in an organization is the lack of theory. And, of course, drama creates heroes. There's never a hero without drama. And in fact, you think about football games or whatever, what makes a hero is the drama of it. Same thing during a war. There aren't any heroes without a war. And Deming says businesses are not about drama. They're about prediction, about being very quiet, very centered, and following the flow of your theory. You should be able to predict and not create drama, not create heroes. It just should be peaceful. Your banker doesn't like drama. Your business doesn't like drama. So if you've got a lot of drama in your business or your life, you may not have the right theory. You're probably basing your actions on a theory that isn't at least the most optimal.
Would one need just one validation of the theory in order to prove that theory correct, or would one need several validations?
Well, if the theory is good, it'll hold forever, over and over and over again. I mean, the theory of gravity, you can drop a pen for the rest of your life, and it's going to be very predictable. So no, if the theory is good and accurate, there will not be any exceptions. It will just follow, assuming that you're following the theory and using the correct method. So, but the theory has to precede the method.
All right. Let's continue and find out what that crucial difference is.
Third is you've got to find your niche. And your niche really has to be what? You've got to be different, but it's got to be what? Different is necessarily better. It's got to be what? But better is always different. So it's got to be different, better. And that'll get you started. But that doesn't make you millions. What makes you millions is the next step. And it's always there. I have never met a millionaire who didn't use it, ever. There's not one that I have ever met. And it's called one simple word. It's called leverage. Why is it that a baseball player makes millions and a teacher doesn't? It's one home run and it's seen by what? Millions. How many times does Mark have to do one of his series here? Once he's got it done, it's what? What? Done is done. But how many times did he sell it? Hello? Where did he make his money? In this room or in the other room?
The other room.
Hello?
The other room.
The other room. That's leverage time.
Give me a big enough lever and I can move the world or make millions of dollars. Marshall, what are your insights on leverage now?
I think people are always confused about this because you think about a teacher and how much value a good teacher adds, and you watch a football player and think, well, you know, clearly the teacher adds more value. And a good teacher, I have no doubt, does add more value than a football player or perhaps even a rock singer. But you can realize the difference is that one has leverage and one doesn't. A teacher has maybe 40 students, maybe 50 at the most, and that's not enough leverage to make the type of money we're talking about. The key concept here is you do it once and it's either exposed at that moment to millions of people or it has been used over and over and over again. I mean, a movie is made once and they make hundreds of copies and it showed in hundreds of different theaters across the country, and that's why movie stars get paid so much and why that business has some of the very high-end salaries. It's because there's leverage in it. Same thing for a football player. He scores a touchdown once, and it's seen by millions of people around the world. So if you start to look at, you know, how do I leverage what I'm doing? So you want to find something that you add value doing, and then look at how can you leverage it. And leverage means you can leverage it through other people. You can leverage it by creating very strong systems. That's the key thing with Dr. Deming, was that you make things system-dependent, not people-dependent. And if you can get that, that becomes your leverage. If you have to do it one-on-one, whether it's doing a seminar or if you're a dentist and having to do someone's teeth, there is no leverage there unless, of course, you've got an assistant that can be some leverage. But the concept is, how can I leverage what I do that adds value? And if you get that piece handled, that's where the millions start flowing. I do not know any multimillionaire who didn't leverage it. One of my good friends, Jack Holtzman, started Elektra Records. One of his big clients early on was The Doors. And, you know, I mean, that made the difference. I mean, millions of dollars came from his relationship with The Doors. And I just go over and over and over again. I've not found a multimillionaire that hasn't figured out a way to leverage. You can leverage through people, too, and training. So if you think about that concept, then you're no longer a victim of just adding value. Someone who builds a better product does not make millions. They have to learn how to leverage it. And teachers will not make millions of dollars and will not be paid millions of dollars unless there's some way to leverage it. So here we go again. It's the theory of leverage. Write a book that adds value, that's timeless, and it will provide you with revenue for a long, long time, and you can be on the beach and the revenue will be coming in. But if you have to be a public speaker in front of a room, sure, you can get more and more people there, but it's not where the leverage is. So this is a theory. This is a key piece of the theory, is how do I leverage, not just how do I add value.
Great. So let's learn more about leverage and the magical niche.
Real estate. How much money? Do you think he pays cash for all the buildings he bought? I want to talk to you. I'm going to be in Hawaii next week. I was, how's that condo? I want to borrow your condo. It's leverage. And if you got to look at how do you do it? How is it? How do you leverage? Now, you can leverage tons of ways to leverage. But if you don't think in terms of niche and leverage, then there's one last piece. And most people use another piece, and that's people. People are a form of leverage. I had 25 salespeople. How many offers could I present in a day if I did it by myself? 10 maybe if I was really hot. We average 50 offers a day. There's no way I as a human being could do it. I had my what? Hello?
Leverage.
I had 25 people out there what? Finding properties, negotiating, and they came back and I would just sit there and I only handled the top 80-20 rule. I handled the 20% of the 80% of our results.
I sense a powerful equation here, Marshall. What exactly is the 80-20 rule?
Well, this comes from a person named Wilfredo Pareto, who in 1895 in Italy came up with the concept that as a general rule, 80% of the impact results come from doing 20% of the activities, and that the remaining 80% of the activities produce only 20% of the results. It's called focusing on the vital few. Pareto charts are used in Dr. Deming's work to make invisible visible, and you want to focus on just those things that are vital. We all are working very, very hard. The problem is, are we working on those vital few? I mean, to give you an idea of how this rule works, you know, 80% of the sales come from 20% of your customers. 80% of the products in a manufacturing company are usually on 20% of the line. 80% of the sick leave is taken by 20% of the employees. 80% of your files in an office are, you know, usage. 80% of the usage is on 20% of your files. 80% of the dirt anywhere is on 20% of the floor area. 80% of the time you wash 20% of your clothes. 80% of the time you wear 20% of your wardrobe. And if you take a newspaper, 80% of the reading in a newspaper is done on 20% of the pages. It's the front page, sports page, editorials, columnists, and feature story. And, you know, 80% of your telephone calls will come from 20% of your callers. And what's really interesting is you start to look at this and you focus on the vital few, and it allows you to be much more productive. It's critical to understand this only holds true about 80% of the time, however.
So really, it's a way of focusing on the, as you say, the vital few versus the trivial many.
Yes, and you must make the invisible visible. You've got to collect some data here to know where are you spending your time, and is that the vital few, or are you really working on the trivial many? So there's a whole part here of, you know, you can work very, very hard, add value, but if you don't spend your time, 80% of your time on how to leverage it, you're not going to become a multimillionaire. Build a very, very value-added product and then spend 80% of your time leveraging that value-added product, because that's really going to be where your millions are going to come from.
Great. It sounds super. Let's continue.
I was leveraged. I invested. I remember my partner in that. I said, we are really going to invest in our people. And he said, hey, I thought we were investing in real estate. No. What's the most appreciating asset? What's the one asset that doesn't show up on your bottom line, on your balance? What does it show up when you hand in your financial statements? What's the asset that's not on your financial statements? You! You are the asset that's the... And guess what? You're the continually appreciating asset. There's nobody here who's not wiser today than they were yesterday. Why? You've had the experience of what? Hello. How many people today wouldn't do something they did earlier in their lifetime based on their experience? How many? Raise your hand. What does that make you? Much wiser. That's why you hang out with masters. They've had some depth of experience. Bucky said, well, I knew so much as we made so many mistakes. It's still, so the next piece then is that when you invest in yourself, you also, the way to do it is to make sure, in my experience, is that this, see, it doesn't matter. If Mark lost all his money tomorrow, you think he's going to come back strong? Do you think it'll be over for him? No, because he knows the rules. See, it's the principles. Bucky talks, the whole world is run, as Bucky Fuller talks about, a pure principle applied.
A pure principle applied. Marshall, how would you define a pure principle and its application?
Well, here I didn't understand the concept of theory, but I believe Buckminster Fuller was talking about pure theory applied. And so what we're really talking about here is the concept of everything, you call them generalized principles or generalized theories, that the theory of leverage works whether you're using one type of board or another type of board. If you've got a fulcrum and a lever, you've got the concept of leverage. It's a theory of leverage. Same thing happens with the inner attractiveness of bodies. In other words, if you remove two bodies and the further apart they come, they're inversely proportionate, their inner attractiveness. This is a generalized principle. And what Fuller felt was that the world had a certain number of generalized principles and that they all were complementary to one another. They never contradicted themselves. And so in this case, with the world as pure principle applied, that basically you've got pure theory applied. So the very first thing is you've got to have your theory. Then you apply that theory with a method, and then if it's the correct theory, then your outcome is going to be there. And so leverage is a principle or a theory. It works over and over again. It's never failed. You've never seen the theory fail because it's impeccable. And so you get the right theories, they're highly predictable. So here really, I would change this term to pure theory applied. So you've got theory, again, method, and then your outcome. There's a couple of steps in between there, but we'll talk about them after you've got your theory and your method. Then there's a couple of steps. We're going to address that a little later.
And when we look at the word method, or look at method in this case, we really might align it with the concept of the doingness that needs to make your heart sing.
Yeah, the do-do of it. Yeah, the do-do. What is the do-do of your product or service that allows you to add the value? Yes.
Great. And the theory actually might be also associated with what we might call universal laws.
Right.
And when you align yourself with those, you're unstoppable.
That's correct.
All right, here we go.
Once you understand the principles, the second step is application. We're doing a course called it's a year-long course, started yesterday, right? All day long. And basically what it is, it's the application of the principles.
The application of the principles. Marshall, could we also say the application of the theory?
Yes, it's really called, I call it now the practicum. It's the actual doingness of whatever it is that you're doing to add value. And the key thing here, of course, is you've got a theory. That theory is then going to show itself in your actual practicum. However, if you've got a theory, then you make a prediction. If you go to the bank with the projections as to how much money you're going to make, that's in effect a prediction. And if you start to realize that there is no knowledge without a prediction, you'll start to see that wisdom is shown when somebody makes a prediction and it comes true. So what happened? Einstein made a prediction, it came true. Deming made a prediction, it came true. Buckminster Fuller made predictions, and they came true. And that's what made them geniuses, their ability to predict future performance, so that the future performance is then followed by the actual practical experience. Now, the practical experience is going to be framed by the theory. The atomic bomb was framed by the theory of Einstein's. You understand that Deming made his predictions about where the Japanese economy would be, and Buckminster Fuller made 50 different predictions, all based on what he called generalized principles or generalized theories, and they all came true, at least 47 of them did. So his theories are very, very accurate. So here we're talking about where the rubber meets the road. It's the practical application of the theory. And if you can predict future performance, there's no drama. Your banker's happy. Your bank account grows. And life is good.
So we might say the practicum is really the arena in which we test the validity of our theory.
Absolutely. That's the test. And then you study how close your prediction is to the actual result once you've gone through the practicum. Absolutely. And that's where you continue to refine your theory. And the more accurate the theory, the more predictable the outcome.
All right. Let's continue on.
And I know it's going to work. Why? As long as people apply the principles. I mean, one day a month for a year. And guess what people do during the month? Apply the what? The principles. Day by day. And then none of them are difficult, but it's just the commitment to invest in themselves and apply the principles. It's all you have to do is follow the dots. Most people don't even see the dots.
I like the concept of following the dots to millions, Marshall. How would you elaborate on this point?
Well, I didn't understand it at the time, but really what Deming was saying and what Fuller was saying is that nothing's obvious if you don't have the theory. I mean, it's quite obvious to us now that the world is not flat, but until you got the theory, the Copernicus head, we not only thought that the world was flat, we also thought we were the center of the universe. So your perception changes once you've got a different theory. And right now, why we don't have more multimillionaires is they don't understand the concept of value added, and more specifically, they don't understand the concept of leverage. I mean, value added they might get, I think that's more common, but the concept of leverage and the theory of leverage is essential. And unless you're willing to look at how can I leverage this, you're not going to make millions. So the key thing here is if you follow the simple steps, start to look at, what makes your heart sing, find a person who has mastery in that field, study with that master, understand the theoretical base that master is operating under so that you can really learn that theory so it becomes part of you, so you can predict future performance on your own behalf, then combine your unique talents to find your niche. Once you've found your niche that adds value, how do you leverage it? If you put all those pieces together, it's real simple. It's following the dots, one right after the other. If you'll do it, you'll make millions of dollars. If you don't follow it, it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible.
Let's follow the dots.
When I was into making the money at that time, I made $24,000 a day for 3 years, average. So the next piece, though, the real piece for me is if you're going to deal with people, the next thing, and I'll turn it back over here, but the next piece is that alignment. You've got to have your people aligned. If they're not aligned, because what? An aligned team will always outperform. I have predicted the Super Bowl winner now for the last 19 years. I have never not picked the winner. Why? All I do is, and by the way, there have been upsets, and I've always won. Because I've watched to see which team is aligned. Which team has, because out of alignment comes synergy, the magic. 1 + 1 = 3 or 4 or 5. It's that aha, that surprise. An aligned team will always outperform, will always win. That's why General Motors outbeat Ford. Ford is a genius. No one was better than Ford. No one thought like Ford. And yet General Motors got together, five of them with Sloan and four other synergistic players who were aligned and took over. Now they're no longer aligned, and of course Ford's now gone into the synergistic approach, and they're just doing tremendously better.
Marshall, it looks to me like Ford's turnaround is really nothing short of miraculous, but it really wasn't an accident, was it?
No, it wasn't. In 1980, Ford lost $1.6 billion, and as Peterson, who was at the time president and chairman of the board of Ford, he said, we were like in a state of crisis or emergency. We were like being in the hospital in the intensive care ward and someone had just given us our last rites. And along comes someone with a pill called the Deming pill. And, of course, was either dying or taking the pill. And, of course, we took the pill. Buckminster Fuller refers to that as emergence through emergency. And having lost $1.6 billion, Ford was in a state of emergency. So what they did is they listened very carefully to Dr. Deming and his theory of value added, and it took them until 1986 when they created the first Deming-mobile, which is the Ford Taurus. And of course, that turned Ford around, and it's continuing to dominate the market. So I've learned a lot about this, that synergy is a great thing in terms of working with team, and I've always thought about team, but a team aligned with the wrong theory has no chance against a team that's aligned with the correct theory. I've got several simulations that I do where we show the difference. I mean, team has to have the right theory. As Deming said, a team without the correct theory is at a tremendous disadvantage and quite often is just recycling ignorance. And so you really need to train your people in the tools. You have to train yourself in the tools of making the invisible visible, working together synergistically, and you will outperform any individual, and you will also outperform any group or team that doesn't have the correct theory. So here we go. Ford now has the correct theory. They're working as a team. They're not working any harder than they were working before when they were losing $1.6 billion. They've just got a different theory. Same people, different theory, different outcome. Same thing happens in schools where they apply the Deming approach. Children are transforming before the eyes of the teachers. Same children, only difference, changing the theory. So it's very, very important to understand that a team aligned with the right theory will always outperform a team that doesn't have the correct theory.
So what Dr. Deming really provided was a very, very elegant system of working smarter, not harder.
Absolutely. provided a system with the correct theory and a method with the tools that allow people to know when to act and when not to act, and when to act exactly what type of action to take. And that only can come by having your frontline people and yourself learning these specific tools.
Great. Let's move forward.
So, if you're willing to do those things, willing to only commit yourself, by the way, to look and do, and I know it's scary, hey, how can I make money if I want to play a piano? Or whatever it is, hey, you know, your mind says, I can't have it that much fun. But it's time to recondition. And there's been a lot of programming, you know, by the way. How many thoughts do you think you have in a day, and how many do you think are positive, and how many are negative? So it's real important to discipline and look at it, listen to the tapes. These tapes are critical. Everyone here, I would buy Mark's Leverage. Be part of his leverage, and guess what? You'll learn a ton from that. So if you'll do that, if you'll only do what makes your heart sing, find a master, get some experience, look for your niche, find your niche that's different, that adds value, not just different, but it has to be different than adding more value. Get it leveraged. Get your team aligned, which means the team has got to have a shared vision, shared ground rules. And by the way, do you think that once you've got aligned, it stays aligned? No. Speed of change. There are no straight lines in the universe. They've never found one. We don't even walk in a straight line. You make a mistake first to the right, then to the left, then to the right again, as Fuller would say. But over, as you do that, you navigate. So you're constantly getting your group aligned. It's the key of the leader is to get his group aligned, keep it aligned. And there's always the constant working on that vision, the vision, the vision, the vision, then the frequency, boom.
This reminds me of the laser concept. So really just keeping very, very focused on one point.
Yeah, there's no question here that you've got to have a vision. I mean, how do you see yourself out there in the future? And everything's created twice, once in the mind and then in reality. And unless you can actually see it in your mind, at least have some idea where you want to go. As Jonathan Livingston Seagull said, to fly as fast as thought, to be anywhere that is, you must first begin by knowing that you've already arrived. And so unless you have that vision, and by the way, that vision has to be congruent with your inherent values. Values really have to come first. And you know, what do you value? Is it family? Is it travel? What are your hardcore values? And make sure that your vision is aligned with those values. And if you've got that and a clear vision, and then you get the right theory and then follow all these principles, then you'll be fine. I mean, you will make the millions that you want, you'll have what you want, and you'll be happy to have it. So it's critical, though, that to hold that thought of where you want to go and hold it no matter what. In other words, it's not going to get there straight. There are going to be no straight lines. I've never seen one. As Bucky said, there are no straight lines again. And so in this case, just the vision is where you want to go, and you'll get there by following the principles, and there will be some variation. Deming said that, like it or not, you know, 50% of your time you're going to be below the average of your average day. So in other words, that 50% of the time things are good, 50% of the time they aren't as good as the good days. And like it or not, that's just how it is. So you've just got to understand that concept of variation, and there are going to be better days than others, but the vision's what's going to keep you focused and directed, the laser-like principle.
Great. Sounds like boom time to me. Let's keep going.
So as a leader, that's what you do, is you align your leverage, you align your people, you support them. And underneath all of that is the integrity. In this great world, we're in the metaphysical world and in the real world, integrity is the essence. If there's anything that, if you look in your life and anything that hasn't worked, that somewhere along the line you haven't told the truth about it way back when. Integrity is the essence of everything successful. If it's out of integrity, it's out. So if you're willing to just stay with your own integrity, commit yourself to doing what makes your heart sing, make sure that it adds value, figure out how to leverage it, align your people with a constantly keeping that vision in front of them, constantly correcting the vision as you get clearer. It's a piece of cake. Really. It's not, and, you know, and then what? You know, then go ahead and make another bigger difference. And you'll make a million, millions. Money is no problem, really. It's the willingness to choose to play that way, really. It's that simple. But change that frame of thinking. Listen to those tapes over and over and over and over. I mean, I've listened foul. I don't go anywhere. I have my little Walkman. Because I rent cars, they don't have tape decks. I'm on the way over here, and I have the ones that you can hear out of. You know, they stick in sort of so you can hear what's going on the outside. It's on all the time. I mean, all the time. I'm willing to take you out in my car right now and show you the whole list of tapes I have there. On the airplane. And we are information. And information's changing that fast that I can't stay. That's the only way I stay up. Well, bless you and thank you. All right.
Marshall, are there any parting thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with as they begin their journey to making millions of dollars?
Yes, just follow the system that's provided along with this tape. If they'll follow the system, if you will follow it, you will make millions. It's that simple. I mean, the steps are right there. It takes some time. I didn't say it would happen overnight, but it will be very easy if you're willing to do this and understand that commit to the principles, follow the steps, follow the dots, and you'll make the millions. And I wish you the very, very best.
Great. I'd also like to add that if our listeners are interested in any further emergent Timeless Publishing products or in a schedule of Marshall Thurber's seminar appearances around the country, to call the 800 number on the tape or the package it came in. And thanks for listening.